So I just want to take 3 or 4 minutes here and talk about what my sabbatical time away will feel like, will mean for the life of the congregation. We've been doing our best to communicate this, but if you don't know, and if our emails go to your junk folder and you never read them, then let me first say that starting after today, I'll be away on 12 weeks of sabbatical leave. Most everything I do has been handed off to other people and things. We've worked hard to make plans, so this will be it'll certainly be a good time for me, and I'm really grateful for it. It's really important to the session, as we've planned for this time this year, that it be a good time for the congregation as well. But I've asked for questions and concerns, and one of the questions I've gotten several times, and it's a good one, what about funerals? It's a real question, right? I think basically behind that question means, you know, most of what you do we will handle just fine and probably do it better than you, Jared. But what about funerals? Good question. So I'll be away traveling, sort of away for a couple of pockets of time. And when I'm away and can't get back, of course, I can't do funerals then. But for the other bulk of the 12 weeks I'm away, I'll be around. So would be able to do funerals for our congregation. So that's the answer to that question. If something happens while I'm away, I have colleagues, pastors in the area who are able to step up, and Laura can officiate funerals as well. So we'll make sure we're well taken care of. So let me just say quickly, as we planned for this, there were some themes that were important to the session about congregation side, the congregational renewal that can happen this summer. We put these themes in this kind of language. We named three of them sort of congregational goals, and they are deepening our friendships, telling our stories, and renewing our connections to mission work. So a lot of the stuff that will happen this summer in the flow of worship and fellowship and all that stuff has to do with those themes of friendship, telling stories, connecting to mission work. So one of the very first things the session said is, let's cap this 12 weeks that I'm away with 2 weeks of our Sunday serve. So that's how it starts and ends. And there's 10 weeks in between, and most of the stuff that's happening is connected to these themes, things that we want to accomplish as a congregation. So two different weekends, there will be mission workers with us sharing their work and inviting us into that work. The Living Waters for the World team from our own presbytery will be here sharing about their Dominican Republic trip. And then missionaries from Zambia, Charles and Melissa Johnson, will be here July 30th that weekend to share about their work on the telling our stories part of it. We're not bringing in a Presbyterian pastor to preach through this time. We're letting our own people tell their own stories and getting to know one another better. Yes, through working alongside each other on these Sunday serve days, but also in the way we worship together. So Carol Crane's designed this celebration of music Sunday at the end of May. Our speakers after that will be Jane Campbell and John Hill and Bill Pollack. And then in July, Laura Agee will be preaching a 3-week sermon series on Ezekiel. I bet you have not read Ezekiel lately, so that is going to be cool. It's one of my favorite books of the Bible, so that will be good. So all that stuff so that this can be a good experience. So I hope that you'll be a part of that. Now let me say a quick word about me. Themes for me, what I hope to accomplish while I'm away. I put it in these terms. The goals are to reconnect with family and friends, to spark creativity through travel to different places, and then time for reading, reflection, and writing. You know me well, so these themes won't come as a surprise for you. Part of the real blessing for me will just be that I get to step back from the week in, week out rhythms of what I do. So I won't be responsible for planning a service every week, for writing a sermon every week, for doing pastoral care and committee meetings and community meetings. I'll get to step back from that and invest myself in some other projects that are life-giving for me. And this might seem weird to some of you, but I love going to church. Here, but other places too. It's just that here I'm usually on, right? And it's a different way for me to be here. So I really, really look forward to getting to go to different churches and worship with them as a regular human being. That will be great. And I'm a pastor, so I'll also steal every good idea I encounter and bring it back here. But we will get to travel a little bit. Henry's working, but the younger boys and Stephanie and I will go visit friends in Oxford, England, and stay with them and tour southern England and see the Cotswolds and Stonehenge and University of Oxford and The thing I'm most looking forward to, we have tickets to see Julius Caesar in Stratford-on-Avon by the Royal Shakespeare Company, and so in his birthplace. So that's my big thing. And then we'll spend a few days in London before we come home. And then another trip that Stephanie and I are taking will be to Northern California with friends of ours, to wine country. So those are two big trips. Other than that, for me, it will just be small getaways, retreat time to read and to write, which is what I love doing. It's also how I sort of get straight in my head and get focused and get clear and sort through things for myself. So it'll be really life-giving for me. So I'm incredibly grateful for this time. So thank you to the session. For all your support, to the congregation, for the financial generosity that lets me be away. Thank you to all the people taking on extra work so that this could happen. I pray that it's a good time for me. And so I will be praying for you, and I would ask you to be praying for me as well. You should be delighted to know that though the normal sermon is 4 to 4.5 pages, it's just 2 today. So there you go. Suppose you achieve something or you accomplish something and someone said to you, you've come a long way. Well, how would you take that? You've come a long way. Well, it's a compliment, of course, but it contains a little barb, doesn't it? That your past track record wasn't quite as praiseworthy. You've come a long way. Sort of like if someone said to you, you're not nearly as negative and judgmental as you used to be. Okay. That's a compliment, right? But there's a barb to it. Or what if maybe someone said to you during our greeting time today, this haircut looks way better than your last one. It's a compliment, right? It's saying some positive, but again, the barb. So the author, Hilary Mantel, is writing a 3-book series. It's his historical fiction set in England, the story of King Henry VIII and all of his wives and the noble families struggling for power. I love this series. First 2 books were Wolf Hall and Bringing Up the Bodies. The third one hasn't come out yet. It's great stuff. The most interesting character by far is a young boy who's the son of an abusive alcoholic blacksmith father from a dirty little unimportant town, a nowhere. His name was Thomas Cromwell, and he rose from those beginnings to become the most powerful person in England other than the king. He was chief minister to Henry VIII. Now, he rose to power because of ferocious ambition and a willingness to do almost anything, cut any corner to get ahead and accumulate power. And so, of course, Cromwell accumulated many enemies, and they took every opportunity they possibly could to cut him down to size. And when they wanted to disgrace him, they could always refer to his modest beginnings in a dirty little town called Putney. They called attention to his shameful past, his lack of connections to any noble family. He didn't have a family seal. Their way of saying, you've come a long way, Thomas Cromwell, but remember where you're from. Our reading today starts with this line, like newborn babies, crave pure spiritual milk so that by it you may grow up in your salvation now that you have tasted that the Lord is good. This reading has within it several wonderful images, suggestive pictures of how God loves us and draws us deeper and deeper into the goodness of our own lives. But it's Mother's Day today, so I want to stick on this first image, a plain and obvious, though easily overlooked, image of God as a breastfeeding mother. The image is also of the rest of us feeding ravenously at the breast of our Mother God, growing up, growing bigger in our own salvation. Mother's Day is a good day, but it can also be a hard day for lots of us for lots of different reasons. Some of us have lost our mothers, and that makes this day hard. Some of us mothers and parents who are here have had painful experiences and griefs of various sorts, and that can make it a hard day. Some of us have experienced miscarriages, and lots of people often just feel left out by the mother category in general. And so let's bear that in mind today and make sure that it's an inclusive day. In spite of all that, all of us share the fact that we all have mothers, either biological or adopted mothers, maybe, that were important to us. And so we all share this human experience of birth, nurture, growth, development, maturity, and then eventually, hopefully, independence from our caregivers so that we can live our own lives. And there is good news in all of this, given this imagery from 1 Peter 2. And I think the good news is this. There is real joy and peace and clarity that can come to us when we are free to be honest about what it feels like to grow up. And I mean honest about all the bumps and scrapes and bruises along the way, along the path it took for you to become you, right? It wasn't easy. Even if you have a wonderful, caring mother, it still takes a lot of hard work to grow up into fuller, richer, more beautiful lives. Growth of any kind is never going to be easy. Often we try to make our lives appear effortless and graceful. We're like ducks, calm and serene, gliding gracefully across the glassy surface of the lake, while underneath we're paddling like mad, but trying to hide it. And yet today's reading calls us to welcome into our lives this image of God as the mother who raises us, the mother who feeds us at the breast, this image of ourselves as needy and dependent and vulnerable babes, hungry, fed, and growing. In this picture, everyone is vulnerable and dependent. No one is powerful or on top or independent of the need of other people. Everyone's growing. Now, when you think about the biological pictures of how we grow up, it's a very different picture, right? You go through puberty in early adolescence, and by the time you get to your early 20s, for the most part, your body has reached its apex, and then for the next 60 years, your body just sort of unravels, right? Sorry if this seems like a negative picture, but this is basically how the biological clock runs. Well, not so with this image we get from 1 Peter 2. That's not the image at all. This isn't an image of people who spend the last two-thirds of their lives stuck or blocked or fixed in place. We hear this powerful call, this expectation to keep growing. So whether you're 8 or 18 or 48 or 88, you are to imagine yourself as the person fed and nurtured by the tenderness of God and growing up, growing bigger, growing wider, growing deeper in your own salvation. Now, what does that mean, growing up in our salvation? Well, some of us have inherited images of salvation that are rather black and white. We might think of being saved as a clear-cut status. You're in or you're out. You're safe or you're in danger. It's like the old saw about being pregnant. You either are or you aren't. It's hard to be sort of pregnant. And yet these images of breastfeeding, of tasting goodness and drinking it in, of growing up in our salvation, these images suggest something far different. Salvation isn't an accomplishment. It's not an achievement. It's not a finish line that you cross and then you're done. It's more like a vast ocean of God's great love, and there are a wide range of being in it, from splashing around at the shore to swimming out further and further into the depths of it. Now, of course, it's hard to know for all of us whether we're growing in God's love or not. Am I growing in my salvation? But our reading does offer some help and guidance here as well. Growing up in our salvation will always, always mean growing together with other people. That's the clue. So on that note, I want to encourage you to resist as best you can the temptation to check out for the summer because your pastor will be away on sabbatical. In fact, these coming weeks will be a great time to express your growth, your maturity, your responsibility, your leadership as part of God's new family together. Church isn't just a religious version of American self-help where the journey always remains an individual one. No, says our reading, you are living stones being built together into a new kind of house. Your growth and your maturation will always be marked by your willingness to become connected to other people who are part of God's house too. So together, we living stones are a royal priesthood, a people whose lives embody God's grace and love in our wider community and in our neighborhoods. And the goal of this salvation is not just some heavenly afterlife. Rather, the goal is for all of us to become fully activated, fully capable, fully responsible people who are learning to see ourselves as living stones within this new kind of building. So you've come a long way, baby, but keep going. Amen.